Welcome to the Goals Podcast, the business case for women's sports, where we explore every corner of the women's sports industry from the field to the front office. I'm Caroline Fitzgerald, and I'm here to prove that it's good business to be in the business of women's sports. Today's episode is brought to you by Ally, a changemaker in women's sports steadfast in their commitment to the fight for media equity. Our guest today is Laura Andriani, the Senior Vice President of Consulting at Two Circles. Welcome to the show, Laura.
Thank you for having me, Caroline.
Well, thank you for coming back on the show, Laura. This is a special two-time appearance here. It's so wonderful to have you come back. And so much has happened with women's sports since we first talked. And you and your team have done so much in the space as well. So honestly, this conversation is a bit overdue. And I'm really excited to talk with you today because one thing you and your team have worked on is you recently put out the U.S. edition of the 2024 Sports Attendance Review, which is a report that you and your team released and has some really, really significant findings about women's sports and the overall growth of the sports industry. So we're going to talk about it today. We're going to geek out over the data, which we love to do here on the Business Case for Women's Sports. But before we go through that, can you give our listeners a refresh on what Two Circles is and what you do in your role as the SVP of Consulting?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you again for having me. It's just an absolute honor to be part of everything that you're doing. And yeah, so much has changed since we last chatted. So excited to dig into it. What we do at Two Circles is we help sports and entertainment properties, brands, and events basically grow their audiences and grow their revenues. And a lot of the reason behind that is because we believe that we know fans best. We process over 1.5 billion data records on sports fans every year. We talk to hundreds of millions of sports fans every day through social. So I think we're really well equipped to be able to say that we understand fans in terms of what they like, what they do, how they interact. And we use that to basically help grow their audiences. And what I do at Two Circles is really, we're a very people first organization. And so my primary job is to help my team do what they do best, which is using data to understand our fans better and drive that growth.
It's amazing. And like I said at the top, I know you do so much work specifically in women's sports. So are you able to tell us more about your clients in the women's sports space and how you work with them?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll pull from two kind of very distinct examples, just because I think they're in a way like very complementary. We work with UEFA. We are the media rights and the sponsorship agency for UEFA Women's Champions League. For UEFA Women's from the 2025 to 2030 cycle, commercial cycle, which is basically helping them understand how best to approach and navigate the media rights space as well as sponsorship. And then on the flip side, we have an amazing longstanding client in Wimbledon. And what we do within Wimbledon has a lot to do with fan engagement. And we have a lot of kind of combined strategies with Wimbledon to think about how they best interact with every level of fan, from a hardcore tennis fan to a, you know, very casual sports fan, and how you use mediums like social to engage with both of those different groups and give them kind of fun content that that kind of like sparks their curiosity and, you know, drives more conversation.
Absolutely. And you guys really are the fan experts. You know so much. You try to be, and you need to be in order to do the work that you do. And most recently, as I mentioned earlier, you released the 2024 Sports Attendance Review. And again, that included some really meaningful and really interesting insights around women's sports and what fans are doing, fan behavior, etc. So let's start with the big headline from that report, which is that 292 million fans attended live sports events in the U.S. in 2024. And that was up by 3% from the previous year. And what's really significant about that is that women's sports were a huge driver in that bump in that year-over-year growth. So from this new data, what stands out to you most? What do you think is most meaningful and the biggest takeaway from all this?
Oh, gosh. There's so much to take away there. We could do a podcast just on that kind of insight alone, right? And what it means. But I think the overarching kind of storyline there is, you know, 50% of that growth came from women's sports. That's astronomical. And I think that it will only continue. And the reason why I think it's going to continue that way is because women's sports have a whole lot of headroom, right? And I think it's very easy to say, well, if you look at the past 24 months, there's been, you know, significant increases in team valuations, in attendance, in media rights sales, in viewership. And so, you know, the work is done. And I think, you know, you and I probably both believe, I know I'm preaching to the choir here, that we are nowhere near done. And I think what a report like the sports attendance report shows us is that there's a lot of room for growth. And so if we see that women's sports making up 50% of that 3% increase, think about what that can actually be when you put the full firepower of like everything we know about fan behaviors and about, reflections on kind of how fans interact. If we start to really supercharge that.
I mean, think about that. That would be incredible. This is women's sports driving 50% of growth with a fraction of the resources behind it, a fraction of that firepower that you referenced. So like, imagine what could happen if we were putting our full weight behind women's sports or at least similar weight behind women's sports that's put regularly behind men's sports. Super interesting. And one other thing that your team discovered was that 70% of WNBA ticket buyers are women. And that doesn't mean, though, that 70% of fans of the WNBA are women. That means that 70% of the people that are making that ticket purchasing decision are women. I find that fascinating. Can you talk more about that and how that information might inform a women's sports properties marketing strategy or go-to-market strategy when it comes to tickets?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's such an interesting little indicator, right? Is to say, well, who's got the purchasing power? But also you have to layer in, what are the influences impacting that purchaser, right? It could be their family, it could be their kids, it could be their friends. And so when you take that data point and you start to actually open the aperture and think about it more broadly, then it becomes actually a bigger challenge, which, you know, might scare some people. I see it as an opportunity, which is, are you doing the right thing in the entire life cycle of that purchase to maximize not just the purchaser, but the attendee's experience? And what I mean by that is, now you know someone purchased a ticket. What next trigger does that affect? Is it the emails that they receive? Is it the ways in which you're talking to them ahead of let's just say the game that they're going to attend? Once you know that they're at the game, what are you doing to tailor the experience to that, not just purchaser, but who's with them? Most likely they're going to, you know, maybe not most likely, but very possibly they're bringing kids with them. So how are you actually creating experiences in venue that cater to both, you know, the adult as well as, you know, maybe the teen or the child? And then after the game ends, the story doesn't just like stop there, right? The book doesn't just close. It's about how you interact after the game to understand, elicit feedback. You know, maybe you're invited to, you know, maybe it's a ticket, you know, package of, hey, we'll give you a discount if you buy a 3-game package. Thinking about the entire life cycle is really where I think the next kind of evolution happens.
I completely agree. You shouldn't just be thinking about who's buying the tickets, because if who's actually attending the game, if they don't have a great experience, they're not going to be purchasing tickets again. So essential to think about the entire life cycle and who to be targeting and who to be taken care of at every single point in that cycle. Super fascinating stuff. As a marketer, I geek out about this kind of data. I think it's so great. And another data point from this report that I absolutely loved reading about was the star power surge, which means basically looking at the impact of massive stars on the economics of live sports. We're obviously seeing so much star power right now from Caitlin Clark, both in women's sports and in just sports, period. And your team found that Clark has fueled 319% of the increase in the Fever's attendance, which is absolutely massive, and a 901 surge in social media engagement. And separately from your report, I also just saw a stat that Caitlin Clark is responsible for 25% of the WNBA's total economic activity in 2024, which is absolutely wild to consider that one player was responsible for a quarter of the entire league's economic activity. So a lot there to unpack, but it feels like a lot is really hanging on one person here, which is not necessarily, I don't know if fair is the right word, but how can leagues both leverage the star power of an athlete like Caitlin Clark while not putting all of their eggs in one basket, so to speak?
Yeah, it's such a good question. And I love it because, you know, I mean, absolute props to Caitlin. Like, this is somebody who's putting, you know, probably without even wanting to, the weight of, you know, the world on her shoulders. And I think she's done it with, you know, absolute professionalism. And I think there is a risk there, right? There is a risk. You want to capitalize on star power, and you'd be silly not to. But if that's the foundation of how you build your brand and how you drive your long-term revenue, then it's a flawed strategy, right? I think the teams and the brands that do it best are thinking about how you use that person's voice, that person's personality, their authenticity to kind of tell deeper stories, right? And to use them as proponents of other teammates, other people that are involved, and use them as the kind of like that they're the runway into getting people to deepen their affinity for maybe the Fever in this example. And so I think when you use them as that catalyst, but you don't just kind of put all your eggs in that basket, you're going to reap a better longer term, you know, strategy that's going to drive deeper results.
100%, especially knowing the caliber of the WNBA and how many stars are
exactly in
the WNBA.
Exactly.
The WNBA is often referred to as an all-star league because every single player really has that star caliber. So it is a delicate balance figuring out how to shape the ecosystem with a star like Caitlin Clark and bring everybody else along with it. It's tricky, but it's definitely a good thing. And it's now just having to solve for it and create marketing plans that are going to lift everybody up with it.
100%. If I could add a piece to this, I think what, you know, was so magical and so cool to see was that in the off season of the WNBA, Unrivaled, you know, really kind of allowed women's basketball to be present, you know, accessible, top of mind, such a social first, you know, kind of approach they took to building fandom. And, you know, Caitlin wasn't playing. And now the season starts and every team has the ability to use their players who played in Unrivaled as part of their like preseason tease into the regular WNBA season. And so having a broader strategy that says, hey, we're going to like, you know, use this person as our turbo boost button, but not be the end all be all, much safer bet.
I love that example of Unrivaled. That's a great, great example. I do want to shift now to talk about the Kansas City Current. So let's shift away from basketball to talk about soccer if we can, because Casey Curran were a big fixture in your recent report. So can you talk about the success that this franchise has seen since they were founded? Because it's absolutely massive, spoiler alert. And what is driving their growth?
Yeah, they've been such an amazing, you know, kind of example to look at. And I think that they, in a way, are they're building a blueprint that, you know, clearly lots of other ownership groups are looking at and saying, well, is that viable for us? Maybe yes, maybe no. But, you know, one of the things that stands out about the Current is that they own their stadium. And, you know, I'm going to revert back to being a data nerd, but when you own your stadium, you now own a lot more data than you would previously if you were playing in a stadium you didn't own. And you think about all of the insights that you can glean from attendance and, you know, your F&B and, you know, what kind of customer support things you're having to deal with when people are at your stadium. You're learning about the wider ecosystem of the economic impact that your games on game day are having, you know, around your community. You're able to also glean data and, by the way, drive, you know, revenue through hosting concerts and other events, private events at your stadium. So I think the stadium component is a really interesting one for the KC Current. They're obviously in an amazing city that just has built into it like a city pride that I think no other American city really like can match. So certainly have the wind at their backs in that sense. But I think the stadium ownership piece is a really interesting one for me.
I agree. I think it's absolutely a critical part of their growth story. And I think it's, like you said, this really interesting case study and blueprint that we're going to see other teams within other leagues start to mirror, because when you do have your own facilities, when you control your own facilities, the commercial opportunity is just off the chart. And that's from both like a practice facility and performance center perspective and a stadium perspective. So it really is this great case study. KC Current were first to do this, and look at the results that have come from their leadership investing in women's sports in a massive way. It's quite a story. I don't want to only talk all about basketball and soccer today, though, because I do feel like that dominates a lot of the women's sports conversation, period, which is not an accurate reflection of everything that's happening within the women's sports industry. And so many other sports are emerging and coming up within women's sports specifically. So, Laura, which sport do you think is quote unquote next in women's sports, and where should investors, brands, media networks, where should everybody be looking if they want to get in early on an emerging women's sport?
Yeah. Oh, this is again, such a good question. You're bringing the good ones today. I think that while it probably won't, you know, shock you, I think, women's softball is really an interesting one to be thinking about and talking about because of a couple of reasons. Number one, you know, we just saw that the MLB is now investing in Athletes Unlimited in the new league that's starting very, very soon. And that's a huge vote of confidence, right, for, you know, this unified effort of saying, hey, there's an audience. That audience maybe has been underserved and not necessarily treated with that tailored, personalized approach to engaging with fans as before. How do we actually like knowledge share between organizations and you know, that's the rising tide that lifts all boats. And so I think that's a really important factor. And the second thing that I think is really awesome is that similar to the WNBA, being able to really drive momentum of fan engagement from college hoops is that college softball is huge. You know, and they, you know, I feel like every time I turn on the TV, there's at least one softball game that is on that I can watch, whether that's linear or whether that's streaming. It's a sport that a lot of us play as kids. And so, you know, you don't have that kind of barrier to entry of like, I don't exactly know the rules, or, you know, this was a niche sport when I was in school and I didn't happen to play it. So I think it has a lot of the, you know, ingredients for a great recipe. And I think there's a lot more that will happen in terms of sponsorships, in terms of, you know, athletes being able to build their own brands, which is already happening and is so much fun to watch. NIL is obviously going to have a huge impact as well in the growth of collegiate softball. So there's definitely a tie there between the kind of college level and then getting into more of a professionalization?
Laura, that's exactly how I'd answer that question. I would also go big on softball right now. I mean, like you said, all the ingredients are there for a perfect recipe. And one thing I'll even add that you didn't touch on is that we're going to be in the LA 28 Olympics with softball. So
yes,
everything is just kind of culminating and leading to Team USA having a great Summer Olympics here in, yeah, in Los Angeles. So I'm with you. Softball definitely has all the pieces in place to be that next major league within the United States. It's really a sport to watch if anybody's thinking about getting in now and getting in early on an emerging, exactly, sport. All right, Laura, I want to zoom out a little bit now and just talk about women's sports as a whole. So we're obviously seeing this major momentum. Everything that your report just returned shows that everything is trending up and to the right. But there certainly are still some really big challenges to overcome to keep this growth going. So what do you think is the next big hurdle that we need to address to keep women's sports trending in the right direction?
Yeah, I mean, I would double down on the reliance on understanding your fans, right? And I talk about this a lot in conversations with friends and anybody who will, you know, kind of indulge me in a conversation about women's sports, which is a lot of people. But I think that there's like, we're kind of getting into the 2.0 phase. And what I mean by that is that, you know, the proof that the growth is there and that we've seen, you know, like I said before, broken records and rise and all the numbers, like that's been proven out. Now, I think where the challenge is what defines success 12 months ago should not be what defines success going forward. We have to use the data that we have to better inform what our strategy is going forward. And we have to hold ourselves to incredibly high standards. We have to be very, very ambitious about what we expect growth to be, both from an audience side as well as a revenue side, because I think people will rise to the occasion when they see this as, hey, we've got a challenge ahead of us. So that's kind of where my mind goes, is using data to build out some really ambitious targets for growth.
I love that. And I love how you described it as, and we're in 2.0, because we are. What it looked like a year ago is not what it looks like today. And we're going to be a 3.0 pretty soon here. So
yeah,
got to keep evolving, got to keep following the data to inform these strategies and these tactics moving forward. I love that answer, Laura. Yeah. That's also a really good spot for us to take a quick break. And then we're going to come back and close our conversation. So stick with us, everybody. We will be right back. As you may know, the goal of this podcast is to show brands, networks, and people in general that it's good business to invest in women's sports. Our sponsor, Ally, shares this belief and knows firsthand the power of investing in women's sports. That's why, along with being sponsors of the National Women's Soccer League, the Atlantic Coast Conference, and the United States Golf Association, they were the first brand to commit to equal media spend in women's and men's sports, because they believe brands have the power to solve media disparity and positively affect the financial trajectory of people's lives. So jump in and be part of the change. To learn more about Ally, go to ally.com. All right, Laura, we are back, and I just have our rapid-fire closing questions for you, which you're obviously familiar with since you've been a guest on the show before. But I am curious to hear if, now that we're in this 2.0 phase of women's sports, if any of your answers to these questions have changed or if they've stayed the same since we last chatted. So if you could wave a magic wand and create gender equity in one aspect of sports right now, what would it be?
I would love to see the same investment at the league level in infrastructure, expertise from a commercial side, from a marketing side, in the women's game as there is for the men's game.
Love that answer. I mean, imagine what would happen. That would be that supercharge like we talked about
earlier. Resource your team the way you would if this was a men's team. Don't do a light version. If you're taking it seriously, do it the real way.
Go all in. I love that. Great answer, Laura. All right, before we get to our last question, is there anything else that you'd like to plug or anything else that you might want to share with our listeners today?
Yeah, I mean, I think that one of the conversations, I was thinking about this question earlier, one of the conversations that comes up a lot at Two Circles with our clients and with our partners is how they build out a really smart long-term strategy for driving growth with what we call future fans. Future fans being Gen Z, Gen Alpha. It sounds at the surface like kind of a not simple, but very straightforward. Like, what's your kid's strategy? And it couldn't be further from the truth. It's complex. It's nuanced. And I think at Two Circles, we've been doing a lot of really interesting work to better inform people on kind of how to navigate that space. So we do have a bunch of reports that have been out and talk about kind of fan origination and, you know, kind of how people become fans. So I think there's just a lot of really exciting stuff around that can be applied to any sport.
Absolutely. And we can make sure we link to all that. We'll definitely link to the 2024 sports attendance review so everybody can check it out. But yeah, take advantage of these resources to learn everything that you can about the customers of sports, which are, of course, fans. Last question for you. And as you know, we always close with this question on the podcast. Can you summarize in a few sentences why you think it's good business to invest in women's sports?
I'm going to end with a data point, which is that in less than a decade, Two Circles predicts that there will be 1 billion new sports fans. If you don't have a strategy within women's sports, and you don't see women's sports as a viable opportunity to capture some of that fan attendance and some of that fan interest, then you're leaving a huge amount of money on the table. So think about it through the lens of that.
I love that. You are dropping the big data point to close this out. Incredible, Laura. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. Thank you for sharing all of those insights, everything from the 2024 sports attendance review. It's really so valuable to the entire growth of the women's sports industry. And I'm just grateful that you came on again to share all of your knowledge and all of your insights with our listeners.
Anytime. Thank you again for inviting me, and keep doing all the amazing work you're doing.
Thank you for listening to the Goals Podcast, the business case for women's sports presented by Ally, a changemaker in women's sports steadfast in their commitment to the fight for media equity. To learn more about Goals and our work to grow women's sports, be sure to follow us across social media or visit our website at goals-sports.com. And remember, it's simply good business to be in the business of women's sports.